It was until I turned 53 when I spontaneously took an instant eyesight leap, showing me everything crystal clear in the field of my vision, far and wide. My name is Laddy Ojas. Welcome to Skeletal Leap, a living adventure. Skeletal Leap transforms one's life into a personal heaven. Today's episode will tell you how I coincidentally stumbled upon an instant miracle that changed my life forever as it turned into the seed that grew this huge tree of Skeletal Leap, promising a heaven on earth. In fact, I will be sharing a bit of my past life that made this coincidental stumble so important for me to analyze it in its absolute depth. I couldn't believe my eyes as they instantly started seeing crystal clear, far and wide. It was miraculous, rather magical. Let me first tell you the background of what suddenly had happened to me, and where and when. I was born and brought up in Missouri, a hill station in the Himalayas situated in the state named Uttarakhand in India. At age 6, I was admitted to my first school. There I soon discovered that I wasn't able to read what the teacher had written on the blackboard with my one eye closed. The other eye, however, could read it perfectly well. I shared this info with my parents, who took me to an optometrist. He checked my eyesight for distant vision and ascertained that my left eye needed a concave lens of power -5 diopter. The right eye needed none. It was fine, having 20/20 vision without any lens on it. The next day, he handed me a pair of spectacles with a -5 diopter lens for the left eye and a plain glass fitted for the right. He warned my parents that I should always keep wearing my spectacles, otherwise my vision could go worse. I wore those glasses for one full day at school, but by the evening I started feeling uncomfortable with them. I quietly put them in a drawer of my study table and went playing with my friends. As my overall sight was 20/20 courtesy my right eye, I didn't find any problem. I also quietly decided I wouldn't take my glasses to school as well. My parents reminded me once or twice, fearing my eyesight could go worse as the optometrist had warned. But when I didn't pay heed to them, they didn't take it much seriously too. My maternal uncle, a bodybuilder, come a boxer, come an athlete, who was also an extremely health-conscious person, had his both eyes fitted with -5 diopter lenses on them. I used to see him trying all kinds of the so-called natural methods to correct his eyesight without any success all his life. But it instilled a bug in my mind that it might be possible. Anyway, even if it was, it must have been shrouded in the mysterious details of the said natural methods. Fast forward. I stayed in the same school for 12 years. After that, I joined an engineering course in Roorkee University, that is IIT Roorkee now. The classrooms there were much bigger than those in my old school. I felt a little short of sight from that much distance, but it was fine when I changed my seat to a bench in the first row. I completed 4 years of my engineering, and immediately after passing out, I got a job in Defense Research and Development Organization as a scientist before I turned 21. My posting was done at Defense Electronics Research Laboratory in Hyderabad, but I was supposed to get my medical examination done in Bhopal before I could join my job in Hyderabad. I was instructed likewise. I reached Bhopal and reported at the scheduled government hospital for my medical examination. I was already aware that my eyesight would show a correction of -5 diopter in my left eye and none in the right. It wasn't an issue, and I was ready for it with my corresponding glasses. But what came out of the eyesight examination just astonished me. Neither of my eyes was 20/20 anymore. The left eye, that was -5 diopter in my childhood, had improved significantly and needed only -2.25 diopter correction now. But the right eye had worsened, needing a similar -2.25 diopter correction too. I immediately ordered a new pair of glasses and got through my medical examination. The ophthalmologist testing my eyes asked me why I didn't use glasses earlier. I told him I didn't because my right eye was 20/20 before, and I was able to see clear with its help. It was only my left eye that had posed a problem then. That's what happens when you don't use your prescribed glasses regularly. Look how your right eye also developed myopia when you didn't use your glasses for your left eye all these years. Had you used them, it would have stayed where it was, he said. But my left eye wouldn't have improved from -5 diopter to -2.25 diopter had I done so. I put forward the benefit that not wearing glasses had done to me. Was it really -5 diopter before? He looked at me with a doubt in his eyes. I showed him my previous eye examination report along with my glasses in my pocket. It never happens so. The eyesight only worsens and never improves in case one stops wearing glasses. He was astonished at seeing my previous eye examination report in front of him. At best, it can stay where it is, but that's only the best case scenario. It never spontaneously improves like you are claiming, he added further. I'm not claiming. I just showed you my old report and my old spectacles. These are my documents as evidences that I'm not lying, I said. It's against all research findings that ophthalmology has done to date. The eye doctor wasn't able to explain what I had presented him with. Whatever, but my account has been in credit of 0.5 diopter. More than what I lost in my right eye, which is 2.25, I gained in my left, which is 2.25 subtracted from 5, it being 2.75. I smiled. Anyway, I got my new pair of glasses the next day and joined my job in Hyderabad a couple days later. This new pair also went to my study table drawer as I faced no difficulty doing my daily chores, including driving with my eyesight at -2.25 diopter in both eyes. More so when I no more needed to read a blackboard or a whiteboard from an extended distance ever in future. In fact, I lived almost all my life without wearing glasses until I turned 53. During those 32 years between 21 and 53, there was no change in my eyesight, whether positive or negative. It remained stable at -2.25 diopter in both my eyes, despite not wearing my glasses all these years. Inspired in my early childhood by my maternal uncle's passionate, though unsuccessful, attempts to get rid of his myopia, it remained as a hidden desire in the depth of my mind all through my life. Even otherwise, I had never liked the very idea of wearing those crutches on my eyes in order to see clear. Glasses did show me clear, but they always seemed to rob me of my depth of vision like the zoom lenses do in photography. The world looked less three-dimensional with glasses than it looked without them. I could never enjoy receiving that flat visual delivery through lenses on my eyes. Now there were two conflicting pieces of information available to me. On one side, there was ophthalmology that claimed any eyesight problem of accommodation once contracted was impossible to revert and needed managing it with lenses or LASIK. On the other hand, there was naturopathy that claimed all eyesight problems of accommodation could be reversed naturally through cleansing the body and providing it with proper nutrition. This proper nutrition comprises vitamins A, B, C, E, and minerals like zinc and selenium, ascribing carrot juice as its star nutrient. Like my maternal uncle, I had already tried all these naturopathic alternatives, but none of them had really worked to revert my myopia. But then, nature did it spontaneously, as it had reversed my left myopic eye from -5 diopter to -2.25 diopter on its own. So I drew a clear demarcating line between nature and naturopathy in my assessment. For the same reason, I needed to reject the claims of ophthalmology too, which stated no reversions were possible. Then there was a claim made by an ophthalmologist, Dr. William Horatio Bates, as long back as in 1891, that myopia was reversible, and he had successfully done that to his patients. Later, he extended his claim to all other eyesight errors of refraction, including hyperopia, astigmatism, and presbyopia. He theorized that problems of accommodation causing errors of refraction sprang out of mental strain through straining extraocular muscles, which resulted in different kinds of accommodation problems. Hence, relieving mental strain would cure all kinds of defective vision. His proposed theory of accommodation was in conflict with the established theory of accommodation accepted by ophthalmology. He theorized that it was the eyeball that caused accommodation through continuously changing its shape via extraocular muscles while focusing at different distances. He explained that in its natural, unaccommodated state, the eyeball was shaped spherically to see clear at infinity. As the distance reduced, it kept elongating itself a little progressively depending on the distance to focus at. When it came to near reading, it further elongated itself to focus at a distance of 12 to 14 inches. As per his proposed theory, all these accommodations were performed by extraocular muscles along with other functions that they controlled. The established theory of accommodation accepted by ophthalmology said it was ciliary muscle adjusting the curvature of natural crystalline lens while focusing at different distances. Hence, ophthalmology ridiculed his proposed theory and rejected it altogether, although it accepted the same theory in case of many other animals, including fishes. The reason that it provided was generated by certain laboratory tests showing that the eyeball in humans was extremely rigid. In fact, it was so rigid that it couldn't change its shape spontaneously to the extent that was necessary to accomplish what Bates had claimed that it did. But Bates kept adhering to his theory. He also devised a toolkit comprising mental and physical exercises to relieve mental strain. These exercises included palming, visualization, memory, imagination, swinging, eye movements, and sunning, including sun gazing. The ultimate target was achieving the central fixation of the eyes, which Dr. Bates proposed was achievable once the central fixation of the mind had been achieved. Like my maternal uncle, I did them all for long, but with no effect on my eyesight at all. Actually, this happens with the majority of people who take a chance at correcting their vision with Bates' method. In my opinion, it was the central fixation of the mind being an abstract entity that few people, if any, could understand how to achieve. The central fixation of the eyes was a concrete entity defined as focusing the rays of light exactly at fovea or retina. When it so happened, the vision was at its best, whether it was focused far or near. The destination was clear, but the way to reach there was a mysterious one. The ways of the mind are always way more abstract and mysterious than the ways of the body are. Although Bates' method had miserably failed me, yet I somehow felt his proposed theory of accommodation made more sense than the established theory of accommodation accepted by ophthalmology. The first reason was my spontaneous reversal of myopia from minus 5 diopter at age 6 to minus 2.25 diopter at age 21. How was it possible according to the established theory of accommodation accepted by ophthalmology? It wasn't a small or a trivial reversal. It was rather a considerably huge reversal of minus 2.75 diopter. The second reason was that ophthalmology always avoided answering the question regarding accommodating between far distances and mid distances after a cataract surgery was performed. During the cataract surgery, the clouded crystalline lens as a result of protein coagulation is replaced with an extraocular artificial lens which cannot change its focal length even a bit. Its focal length is optimized to see clear far and wide. Then how come the operated people are easily able to accommodate between far and mid distances? Also, after the cataract surgery, people are always provided with reading glasses as the synthetic lens cannot flatten at all, reducing its focal length to read clear near. But there have been some rare cases where people can easily read near equally well after a cataract surgery has been performed on their eyes. Ophthalmology had no answers to these questions. Hence, it chose to arrogantly avoid answering them. The third reason was that ophthalmology could never provide a convincing answer to the question what really caused the errors of accommodation, including myopia, hyperopia, and astigmatism. If we take myopia alone, ophthalmology says it's caused mostly by an elongated eyeball or by a too strong natural crystalline lens sometimes. But we all know that these conditions are not mostly genetic and develop at a later stage in life. The crystalline lens cannot turn too strong later in life. Then what is it that elongates the eyeball? They say it might be a lot of near reading at the cost of avoiding outside activities for long. But by its own submission, ophthalmology also admits that near reading is done by flattening the crystalline lens and not by elongating the eyeball. Then how come a lot of near reading at the cost of avoiding outside activities for long would set the eyeball in an elongated stance? Clearly, ophthalmology has no convincing answer for the etiology of the most common error of refraction, affecting 22% of human population that counts 1.5 billion people worldwide at the moment. Same is the case with other errors of refraction as far as their etiologies are concerned. These were the reasons that made me side with Dr. Bates' proposed theory of accommodation rather than the established theory of accommodation accepted by ophthalmology. And it was despite Bates' method to reverse all errors of refraction had miserably failed me. But if his theory was right, his method couldn't have been totally wrong. Was there something that I was missing? Or else, was there something crucial that Dr. William Horatio Bates had missed in designing his method? At that tender age, I couldn't go much beyond this, but kept living my life without wearing glasses at all. It was until I turned 53 and entered the 54th year of my age when I spontaneously took an instant eyesight leap, showing me everything crystal clear in the field of my vision far and wide. This memoir of mine tells the story of the same instant eyesight leap that I took in all its minutest details. But it doesn't stop there. It proceeds further to scan yet unmapped and uncharted territories of human concern. Thanks for listening to this episode of Skeletal Leap, a living adventure. In the next episode, I will tell you how I finally cracked the code of instant visual acuity, showing me every single thing crystal clear in the field of my vision, far and wide, for the first time in my life. Be a part of Skeletal Leap community. Subscribe to Skeletal Leap newsletter. Click on the link in the description to subscribe.